Meanwhile, the Kinder Transport Organization had got underway, a remarkable cooperation between the UK and Germany, Austria and later Czechoslovakia. The first train left Germany on 2nd December 1938. My parents had been trying to get me to England, and a Munich couple, friends of my parents, who had come to Seven Oaks in Kent, were instrumental in finding Mrs. Maud Williams. She was a staunch liberal who already had a girl from Hamburg, Margot Alsberg. Mrs. Williams was prepared to take me so long as she did not have to find the £50 deposit that was required by the government. The Bank of England has informed me that the value of the pound between 1939 and now has increased by 31 times. This sum was specified by the government as a guarantee that the child would not be a burden to the state. It could be reclaimed at the age of 18. My father had friends in Switzerland who transferred the required £50. Then we got a list of things that I would be allowed to take. First of all, the size of the suitcase. But there was no suitcase of that size in any shop. So my mother went to a factory that produced suitcases and had one of those dimensions made for me. That was accompanied luggage, but the hand luggage was quite a small case. However, my mother noticed that nothing was stipulated regarding luggage in advance. So she bought two more suitcases and a sack into which she packed my dowry, blankets, duvets, and then some more extra clothing. It was sent off and I found it in an adjacent hall to where we had been shepherded on our arrival in Harwich. No one else seems to have thought of that at the time, and I often asked myself, why not? Or did they think of it but did not dare do it? But then again, perhaps we were just lucky. All I know is that all that luggage arrived safely in England. The night when the train was due to leave, friends and family had come to our flat in Lindwurmstrasse to have a meal with us. So here I was with my parents, my grandmother, my two uncles and a few friends from the cookery school. I was told to have a little sleep afterwards, but I was too excited at the prospect of leaving on this adventure. I lay on the sofa and just waited till we were all ready to leave by taxi. They all accompanied me and stood on the platform waiting for the train to leave. Before I got on the train, my parents both in turn put their hands on my head and gave me their blessing. That was suddenly a very quiet moment in all the hustle and bustle. But I got on the train where I shared the compartment with an older girl, the daughter of an opera singer, Sterneck, and a little eight-year-old that I was asked to look after. She had come from the Jewish orphanage. It was midnight, 27th, 28th June 1939, when the train left Munich main station. All my friends and my family waved goodbye as the train very slowly pulled away. At that moment, I saw my mom take out her handkerchief and step behind my father so I shouldn't see her wipe some tears from her eyes. But I did see her, and I suddenly realized that I was setting out on something that was not just an adventure. It touched me. I could not then have imagined that it would be years before I saw my parents again. So it was the 28th of June 1939 that we got onto our train that took us to the Hook of Holland. The crossing from Germany into the Netherlands was a bit scary. The train had stopped, of course, and a uniformed chap came through the carriages and asked one or two kids to open their little cases. My mother had hidden a 10-mark note wrapped separately in one of my sandwiches. In the event, nothing untoward happened. And then the train moved out of Germany and into Holland. Suddenly I felt relieved, liberated. At the first stop in Holland, some wonderful big blonde Dutch ladies came onto the train with white bread and butter and orange juice for us children. I shut my eyes now and I can still recall the taste. And they were so nice to us. amazing. Traveling through the countryside, I was most delighted to see a real windmill, thinking, they are not just in storybooks, I must tell my mom. And that's when it hit me. I'm not going to see my mother. I don't know when I'll see my mother again. That night we got onto the ferry to cross the channel. We arrived in Harwich the next morning. I had been looking forward to seeing the sea for the first time, so I was a bit disappointed only to have seen harbours. On arrival at Liverpool Street Station in London, we were shepherded into a large hall with low benches. And there was a group of adults. Our names were called in alphabetical order, and the kids disappeared one by one with one of the waiting adults. My family name being Siegel, I was rather low down on the list. When they called my name, I got up and a lady in a lilac suit greeted me with, "How do you do?" We shook hands and I said, "Yes." She was Estelle Williams, the daughter of the lady to whom I was due to go. We were driven by Mrs. Williams' chauffeur to Braisted Hall, near Sevenoaks in Kent. We went up this drive that led up to and round a little fountain. At the end was this impressive house with steps flanked by pillars up to the front door. Mrs. Williams was awaiting me in the drawing room. She kissed me on the cheek. That was the only time anyone would kiss me for the next few years. I did miss that warmth and tenderness. But it was all right to cuddle the dog. Margot Alsberg from Hamburg had arrived a couple of weeks earlier, but that was another problem because I spoke Bavarian German and she didn't always understand what I said, like Servus for a greeting. My first question to her was, "Are you still homesick?" Thinking that that pain couldn't possibly last. Well, it did. In fact, one never quite loses it, but gradually it stops hurting. But one's Heimat remains one's Heimat. As it was now the beginning of July and the summer holidays were approaching, Mrs. Williams had not thought of sending me to school for just a few weeks. But here I was, not having been to school for so long, I was longing to go. She finally agreed and I went with Margot. Again we were driven by the chauffeur to Nayland House High School. It was summer and I was wearing my dirndl. The other children were wearing school uniform. They did look at me in some astonishment, but the next day I was fitted out with the school uniform too. By next term, war had broken out. I was able to correspond with my parents via the Red Cross by writing 25 words only. That stopped after a while, but I never gave up hope of seeing them again. I concentrated on schoolwork and had one passion. I would master the English language. I loved it, I admired it. Margot, on the other hand, wanted to speak German, but I wouldn't. The idea of communicating with other people from other countries became my focus, and I studied languages at university, and my first teaching job was at Bristol University, where I taught translation. This has become my specialty. I had acquired French and Spanish too. I've won a translation prize, and I think I am good at it. My father had relatives in Peru, but when, after November 1938, even he decided to get out of Germany, Peru would no longer issue visas to Jews. Politically, they were on the side of the Axis. However, my parents decided to continue their Spanish lessons with a Peruvian student who was in Munich to study the Hitler Youth movement. One day, this young man said, "I've always wanted to ask you why I am teaching you Spanish." This was in May 1940. My father said, "Well, we would like to go to your country." The young man suggested that they should go. There was a war. My parents explained that they did try but couldn't get a visa. "Visa?" said the young man. "Why didn't you ask me? My uncle is the Minister of the Interior." When my mother told me the story, she said that at first she didn't believe him. But then, 2 weeks later, a telegram arrived. How many visas do you want? It took them 3 months to prepare for their departure, and they left by train via Berlin to connect to the Trans-Siberian Railway. And from Irkutsk, they sent a telegram to an old Munich friend then living in London. It said, "Traveling to Paris, back to inform children." The Munich friend sent it to my brother, whose army address he had, and my brother sent it to me, evacuated to Wales. I cried. I cried out of sheer relief. I still have that telegram. My grandmother and my uncles didn't want to go with them. They thought their Yugoslav passports would protect them. She died in Theresienstadt. My uncle Josef died in a camp, and my uncle Ernst survived by skiing out of Germany into Yugoslavia, joining the Yugoslav army. It took my parents over 2 months for this journey through the Soviet Union, Manchuria, China, and in Kobe, Japan, they boarded a ship that took them across the Pacific and down to Peru. We could once again be in touch by letters. Then the war ended in May 1945. The relief for all was tremendous, and I'm sure there were people in Germany who felt the same. It was the end of Hitler. In autumn 1947, my brother, who had come out of the English army by then, fell ill with polio and was taken to University College Hospital. I had to write and tell my parents. My mother was able to get the money somehow for a ticket on a rickety cargo ship and arrived in Liverpool in January 1948, where I had gone to meet her. I was a kid when I left, and now I was nearly 23 years old and married. We hadn't seen each other for 9 years. It must have been much more difficult for her than for me. She had come to visit her seriously ill son in London, 5 hours train journey away, and here I was, taller than she was. I'd been smaller when I left. For me, she was still the same mom, except her hair was grey. My command of spoken German was not very good and her knowledge of English was limited, but we managed. It was a bit of an emotional and linguistic no man's land in which we found each other during that 5 hour train journey. The next day I took my mother to the hospital where my brother was sitting up for the first time. I left them alone to talk to each other.